Hello, my friends. Welcome back. Dr. Ken Berry here, family physician, author of Lies My Doctor Told Me. Hopefully going to be joined in a few minutes by Dr. Anthony Chafee, a neurosurgery resident physician who is also a carnivore. And for the next hour or so, we're going to be answering all your questions about a carnivore diet. Is eating more meat good for you? Eating less meat good for you? For the moderators in the chat, we've got several moderators. Please do not block any vegans as long as they are asking questions. Vegans do not need our judgment. They need our help. They are temporarily deluded, misled. That's what they are, is misled. They've been misled. They believe the wrong people. And they are on the way to chronic disease and autoimmune diseases. And I don't want that for them. So if they're just being abject assholes, then block them. But if they're asking questions, let them ask questions, because I want to educate them just like everyone else. I think Dr. Chafee's with us. Let's see. Hello, doctor. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to chat with you again. You as well. What time is it? What time is it in Perth?
It's a 6 a.m.
6 a.m. But you're a neurosurgery resident, so 6 a.m., that's getting up late for you, right?
Yeah, that's it. I was working on a presentation. I'm doing a lecture on spinal cord tumors in a couple hours. So.
Gotcha. So, Dr. Chafee, give us a brief introduction of yourself, what you do, and your history with the carnivore diet.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm an American medical doctor. I'm currently practicing in Perth, Australia, in my residency for neurosurgery, and that's sort of my day job. But I've always been interested in diet and nutrition and how that affects health and chronic disease. And going back to my own career as a professional rugby player and just as a young pre-medical student, just very interested in biology and nutrition. So I've looked into that. For my own personal knowledge and just to give myself the best fuel as an athlete. And 22 years ago, I was taking cancer biology at the University of Washington in Seattle, and we learned just how toxic plants were. I was taking botany, I was taking cancer biology, and this is how plants defend themselves. They defend themselves by having defense chemicals that deter animals and insects from eating them. And so we learned that there were 136 carcinogens just in Brussels sprouts, over 100 in mushrooms, dozens in other vegetables that we eat on a daily basis. And my professor at the time was very much against eating plants. We were quite surprised by this, but he even said himself that he didn't eat salad, he didn't eat vegetables, he didn't let his kids eat vegetables, and that plants were trying to kill you. That was so that's sort of where that phrase comes from on my end. So I just stopped eating plants at that point and didn't really realize it, but I was eating a carnivore diet at the time and I felt absolutely amazing. My athletic performance just went through the roof. My mental acuity and sharpness went razor honed. And I just felt amazing. I ended up slipping off of it because I didn't realize how significant what I was doing was. But over the last several years, I've come across information saying that, well, actually, biologically, humans look like we have been carnivores for quite a long time, and that biologically we're most adapted to that and predisposed to that, and we don't have these set up defenses against all the plant toxins that we may have used to have millions of years ago. And so that's led me down the path of just digging into the research and seeing what we knew and what we could understand, and led me back to a carnivore diet.
Yep, and my journey is much the same. I was morbidly obese, pre-diabetic, severe heartburn, lots of skin problems, lots of issues. And as I continued to cut the carbohydrates out of my diet, starting with the highly processed and added sugar and the vegetable seed oils, obviously, if you've ever done that, you know that meat and eggs are going to play a larger and larger and larger role in your diet, because contrary to what breatharians would have you believe, human beings have to eat. We have to eat or we will die. 100%. You cannot live on sunshine or air or water. You have to have food. And so as you cut out the processed carbs and then just the starches and the simple carbohydrates, you got to replace that with something. And the only thing out there is meat at some point, meat and eggs. And I think that we're going to have some vegans in the chat. I posted this on Twitter, so I'm sure we're going to have a few, and I hope we do. Yeah. Because I, like I said before you came on, vegans need information. They have questions. Every day you and I see a new recovering vegan. It's like, dude, I took a bite of fish and my brain lit up. I ate some bacon and I felt orgasmic. And so I'm happy that there are vegans in the chat. And as long as they stay civil and ask reasonable questions, if you have no opposition, I'm happy to answer their questions.
No, happy to. I fully agree with you. I think that most people are looking for the same thing. They're trying to do what's right for themselves, what's right for the world around them, and that's exactly why people go vegan. It's quite a big step to go vegan or to go carnivore. You're massively overhauling your entire life, and so you don't do that just on a whim, generally.
And absolutely. So I like to say that going vegan is the first step towards a proper human diet, because it's not easy to go vegan. It can be relatively easy to go vegetarian, but if you're going to go vegan, that's going to upend your life, and you have to think about every morsel of food before you put it in your mouth. And so at least they're thinking about their diet and about nutrition. And I think that's an excellent first step. I applaud them for that. I wish everybody in the world would think about every morsel of food that goes into their face hole. I think that would be that would improve health immediately right off the bat if people would just do that. When I was a young child growing up, Granny Berry, who's not watching this today, guys, so you don't have to say hi to Granny Berry, but every vegetable that we ate was cooked to mush. If she were cooking beans, she would cook the beans for, I don't know, 2 or 3 days, right? If she bought dried beans, I mean, they cooked until they were just mush. It was like mashed beans when she got done. And growing up, I thought, well, that she's just a Southern woman. You know, that's just how they cook in the South. They cook everything to death. But when I started looking at diet and started looking at archaeological and anthropological research, it's common knowledge that every society that was forced to eat a high plant diet, they either cooked it to death or they fermented it. Right. And they didn't do that because they were ignorant or stupid. They did that because through thousands of generations of trial and error, they had figured out if you eat this shit raw, it's not good for you. There will be ramifications and repercussions if you eat this raw, if you eat too much of it. And so Granny was just doing what her grandmothers had taught her to do, which it was, if you're going to eat plants, you need to cook the shit out of them. And so I think that if anybody really looks into this, you'll quickly find that in many cultures, humans eat meat raw or very, very rare. But they cook the veg to death. They cook it to death. And I don't like to say plants are trying to kill you. I know what you mean by that. I like to say that plants are trying to strongly discourage you not to eat their leaves and their babies. Now, some plants like castor beans and poison hemlock, they're sure as hell, they're trying to kill you if you eat them. But I think most plants are just trying to discourage you from eating their babies and eating their leaves. Let's see if I can find a question here. Yes, Esther, face hole. That's what we call it here in the South. By the way, where's everybody watching from? What city, what state, what country? Is anybody watching from Australia? You're right up the road from Dr. Chafee. I know any drive in Australia is at least a 4-hour drive, is what I've been told.
It is.
Is that right?
From Perth, okay, it's a 24-hour drive.
Yeah, I think that the carnivore diet naturally produces increased testosterone and therefore facial hair production. A lot of people are commenting on our sexy beards. I don't blame them a bit. We got somebody from Hawaii watching. Roxanne says meat heals, carbs are non-essential. What do you say to that, Doc? Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Well, definitely. I mean, there's no such thing as an essential carbohydrate, from what I understand. And, from what I think that, the literature shows, and there's certainly populations around the world living today that have never had a carbohydrate. And I think you'd be hard pressed to find a plentiful source of carbohydrates during the ice ages. And that was, when people argue, I have had this discussion with people from the vegan persuasion, and they say, well, you know, when the ice ages were happening, everyone was moving towards the equator, which actually goes against the paleoanthropological record. Actually, we found that as the ice sheets were coming down, people were moving up into the into the ice. And you know, just to comment on how you're saying everything was cooked to mash, that's right. You know, there are a lot of things like the lectins in beans. You have to cook the living hell out of these things, and that doesn't necessarily get them all out of there. It was interesting, actually. You know, the WHO, who's very much anti-meat, and they talk about if you want to have like plant-based or bug-based or all these sorts of different things, just anything but meat. They actually have a page on their website that goes into, it's called natural food toxins found in food. And it just says in food. And so it goes through all these things that people naturally eat and regularly on a daily basis around the world. Every single one comes from a plant or algae. Every single one. There isn't a single toxin that comes from meat. There's algae that maybe shellfish and seafood would eat, and then that makes them harmful because they bring that toxin into them. But that's not the animal making that. That is the algae, and everything else is a plant food. And so all of these things like cassava root and many other things that are main staples, I think like 500 million people, their number one caloric source is cassava root. And that has bitter cassava root has a deadly amount of cyanide in it. And I do agree with you about the, you know, plants not actually trying to kill you. I don't think they're just sitting there just waiting for you outside of your door. It's just sort of a funny thing that my professor said to me that they just stuck with me. I mean, it really made a big impact in my life because, I mean, he just looked at us like we were, I remember thinking, I'm like, but vegetables are still good for you, right? And he just looked at us like we were crazy. He's like, get this through your head. You know, this stuff is poison. And so, and it did, it really stuck with me. And so that's sort of, it still sort of makes me smile about that.
And you were very lucky to have a professor who would say such a thing, mm-hmm. because I think the vast majority of people in undergraduate university these days would never hear such a thing come from their professor's mouth. We've got a ton of questions coming in, guys. I'm going to try, Dr. Chaffee and I are going to try to answer as many as we can. If you really need the answer to your question, you can bump it to the top with a super chat like Ashley did. Ashley says, how do I know when I need more meat fat for my ADD today when I try to paperclip my iPhone to a packet of documents?
I think that you need a lot of fat. A lot of animals, if you look in the wild, they're eating quite a high proportion of their calories will come from fat. Sometimes 70, even 80% of their calories will come from fat. But I think you need enough fat. You need enough proteins. I don't necessarily. To make that point clear, I tend to look at, if you're going on pure meat and water, then I think you can actually look by how you feel, your energy levels, but also by your stool, strangely enough, because it's very hard for our body to absorb fat without bile. And we make a certain amount of bile. I think that physiologically that means that our bodies wants that much fat out. Our body's very efficient. It doesn't really just waste its time and waste energy making things that it doesn't need generally. And so I think that it's going to make that bile because it wants that return on its investment to get that fat. After you run out of bile, most of this will go out. You can absorb some, usually like medium chain fatty acids, but a lot of it, the majority of it will go out. And I think that overflow of fat will actually get into your stool and keep it soft. And so if you're getting dry, hard stools, then I think that means that you're by definition not getting enough fat because you're absorbing just every ounce of fat that's coming in. If you're getting a little bit more and you get that spillover, then it becomes soft. You get way more than your body can absorb, then it comes out very loosely, like fat through a goose. That's where that phrase comes from. Yep. And so I think that if you're just doing meat and water, that you can tell that way. And also just, you know, energy levels is a big one too.
Absolutely. And you brought up bile, and I can tell everybody watching right now that if you have one of the following three conditions, then you absolutely have not been eating enough animal fat in your diet. If you have gallbladder dysfunction, or if you have gallbladder sludge, or if you have gallstones, then by definition, you've not been eating enough animal fat in at least the recent or distant past, or you would not have those things. Let's see. Mr. Ed says, my arm swollen up 2 days ago. Felt like it's full of fluid. Very hot. Now it's all gone. Same thing happened to my knee. I'm full carnivore 6 months. Now down 65 pounds. Booyah for that. Any thoughts?
Well, I mean, there are things that could be caused, you know, that can happen to our bodies that are outside of, you know, purely dietary, you know, causes and reasons. So, you know, I would wonder if there's something else going on there. It is good that that's resolved. If you're having swelling, hot swelling in your knee, that's a bit concerning. You might want to get someone to take a look at that and just make sure that.
Yeah, 100%. You need to see your doctor, Mr. Ed. Yeah. If it was your entire arm that swelled up, that's quite concerning. That could be actually something serious. You definitely need to see your primary care physician and follow up on that. Dennis Ballone says, ketovore, what's the meaning of this, please? So Nisha, my wife, and a few other people on social media kind of coined this phrase, ketovore. And what it means is a meat-heavy, fatty red meat, lots of eggs with the yolk, and less than 10 total grams of carbohydrate a day. And if I left something out, I know Nisha will pipe up and let me know. But the basically super, super low carbohydrate, mainly meat. Many days she'll eat nothing but meat for several days, and then she'll have some veg or some whatever, but the vast majority of your diet is meat-based, ketovore. That's the definition of that. Kathy says, DX polycythemia, will carnivore keto make it worse? That's an easy one to answer.
No, I don't think so. No. No,
it will not. It may actually help. It's definitely not going to hurt. Definitely follow up with your doctor and follow your doctor's recommendations about phlebotomy and other things. Polycythemia or polycythemia veris is a genetic thing that's been in the human gene line for thousands of generations. We don't know exactly if it's just a genetic defect that gives no benefit whatsoever, but most of these things that have stayed in the cell line in the genetic line for so many thousand generations typically have a benefit that we may or may not be aware of, much like sickle cell. If you have sickle cell trait, which is just, you have it for just one side of the family, it's actually very protective against malaria. But if you have the trait from both sides and have sickle cell disease, then it's a sucky, shitty disease. But there's actually a reason that that's still in the gene pool, because it does offer some benefit. But even though, Kathy, you have polycythemia, you're still a human being and you're going to benefit greatly in hundreds of ways from eating a proper human diet.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Thank you, Jordan, for the super chat. Let's see. Oh, here is Deckerless Carbs. With cost of all food, especially meat, going up, any concerns with ground beef being the primary food on carnivore?
No, absolutely not. I think ground beef is great. It's meat, you know, at the end of the day, you know, and just because it's coming into sort of a slightly different package, it's still the same quality. As long as the thing's being added to it, you know, then it's exactly the same. And so I think ground beef is a very, very good option for people. It's certainly affordable. And I think sometimes ground beef can be quite lean, you know, but so you might need to sort of add maybe some tallow to it. Mm-hmm. I actually get my butcher to make 50-50 ground beef, which is great.
Yeah. And if you don't, if the store where you buy your meat, if they don't have a butcher, and more often they don't, you can try to get 70-30 ground beef or 73, whatever the other number would be, 27 ground beef. And that, because most people, they think they're supposed to get 85-15 or 90-10. You don't want that. That's way too lean. You're going to have to add a lot of other fat to that. Also, Deckerless Carbs is actually Amanda Decker. She's a nurse practitioner in Dixon, Tennessee, and very active on Twitter. She helps you and me fight the Twitter wars every day. I love Amanda Decker. So if anybody's in the Dixon, Nashville area and you need a primary care provider who understands keto, ketovore, carnivore, Deckerless Carbs, that's your person. Thank you for the super chat. Let's see. Michaela says, hey, thoughts on probiotics. Are they any good? Are they worth it? My doc is suggesting probiotics for healing my gut.
Well, I think that anything that you eat is going to affect your microbiome. But if you're eating what you're naturally biologically supposed to eat, prepared to eat, and designed to eat, that's going to go along with your microbiome as well. And so I think that if you're just eating the right things, such as meat, and not eating other things, I think you'll just be fine. You know, maybe if you took antibiotics, maybe have some live culture yogurt or something like that to sort of restock. But I think other than that, you don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, sugar-free full-fat yogurt is excellent. If you can find sugar-free full-fat kefir, I think that's okay. Any of the fermented dairy is probably fine. As long as it's full-fat and sugar-free, I think it's probably fine. Kyla says, best remedy for paresthesia besides B1 deficiency? You probably meant supplementation. Could low-carb help with this? Doctor ordered occupational therapy, but I'm not sure.
So, I mean, this is, I mean, there's so many different causes of these sorts of things. And so, you know, it really just depends on what's causing it. And, you know, certainly vitamin, you know, alterations can affect that. But I have seen this in practice in neurosurgery. We deal with a lot of spinal impingements and radiculopathies and just pain shooting down the limbs. And this is something that we see get resolved, even just on a keto diet and, yep. And carnivore as well. You're just reducing inflammation. You're reducing your body's experience of the pain, stress, and trauma that's going on in your body. So that is something that can be resolved. But again, it does depend on what's causing it.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, here's a left-handed question about fiber. Michelle's an ex-vegan, had fibroids, had a full hysterectomy, was told to eat lots of fiber post-surgery. She got a bowel blockage, emergency surgery, also gallstones, gallbladder removed. PhD was the answer. Yeah, proper human diet was your answer. You want to give us your bullet points on fiber and how much is essential to human health?
Yeah, I know. I don't think there's any that you want. In fact, I think that not only is it not necessary, I think it can actually be harmful, as we've just seen there. I mean, a lot of people get, you know, they take fiber because they say, well, this will move your bowels, but in fact, in a lot of cases, it ends up blocking them up because this is cellulose at the end of the day, and you end up getting, you know, a block of wood stuck in your colon, and it just slows down, and we're not eating fat anymore, and so things are just drying hard and they dry out, and that's when we started advising people to eat fiber in the first place. Was in the 1980s when everyone stopped eating fat and they all started getting constipation. So I think that fiber is problematic for a number of reasons, that being one of them, but also, you know, it physically blocks the absorption of nutrients. It gets in the way of your enzymatic relationship between your nutrients, and then those then digested nutrients are now prevented from getting to the lumen of your intestines. So you're actually slowing down and blocking the absorption of nutrients. I don't think that's evolutionarily, biologically viable. So I don't think that's the natural thing to do.
Yeah, it's so funny how you progress as you become somewhat of an authority in a topic. When I first started this 5 years ago, Doc, I would have said, oh yeah, you got to have some fiber. You know, you need to eat lots of Brussels sprouts, broccoli, kale, spinach. And then I'm like, well, maybe we don't need any fiber. And then after more reading and more looking at everything with fresh eyes, which is very important, I'm like, no, obviously we don't need any fiber whatsoever. And now I'm slowly begrudgingly taking the final step of saying, you know, I think for many people, many, many people, especially if you have IBS, Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, you don't need any fiber whatsoever. You literally need to put on your, when you go to a restaurant, you need to say, I'm allergic to fiber. I don't need anything with fiber in it because it'll flare my gut up. I've seen, Rebecca's had this question several times. I'm not sure if she's being legit or not. She's been keto carnivore for 4 months and now she has a candida infection. She doesn't say where. Doc says the fungus feeds on fat in my diet as well as sugar. What are your thoughts?
No, I don't think, I've never heard that anyway. I don't know. Have you?
Yeah. Candida is a fungus. It loves sugar, Rebecca. It loves sugar and it hates sunlight. So keto carnivore is the eating a proper human diet is going to load the dice in your favor. Now, this is a very important concept for all 1900 of you guys. Listen to this. Being a carnivore does not make you bulletproof. Being a carnivore does not make you immortal. Okay, it might make you feel like an Avenger, but you ain't really. Okay, you're still a human being. And there every day you have a chance of getting hit by a bus. You have a chance of contracting some infection. You have a chance of getting a yeast infection. But the odds are ever in your favor if you're eating a very low carbohydrate, very low sugar diet, and also getting some sun. So Rebecca, what I would tell you to do is to keep eating your meat and go out in the backyard if you've got privacy fence and get some sun on the area, and your candida will be gone very, very quickly. But definitely there's no fungus that I've ever read about. And I'm an animal biologist, but that's what I got my undergrad in, then went to medical school and we studied fungus very, you know, a lot. And I've never heard of a fungus that eats fat. I think your doctor may be misinformed or just trying to misinform you. All right. Karsten says debilitating Hashimoto and fibromyalgia for 20 years. Can there be a long cleaning reactions like keto flu from time to time, even after months on carnivore?
Like cleaning, I suppose I mean like, you know, just getting a, you know, bad sort of reaction, feeling sort of unwell after. I mean, I guess there's the, you know, the theory of that sort of oxalate dumping months and months on. And so potentially that, I've seen people with fibromyalgia for, you know, years, literally decades, get better and improve. A lot of chronic pain patients, they improve greatly by just getting out all these very inflammatory and really toxic foods out of their diet. And certainly all the processed foods and sugars and things like that, those are just awful. And then, you know, just getting as much of that out of your system is very beneficial. And Hashimoto's, outside of neurosurgery, I have a private practice in, you know, functional medicine and metabolic health. And we have a number of patients with Hashimoto's. That's quite, I think it's quite under described, really. I mean, the amount of people that just come to us with just vague symptoms, just feeling just sort of generally unwell, and we sort of test for it, and they have, you know, just low grade Hashimoto's is remarkable. And
it's very, very underdiagnosed here in the States. Yeah. I don't know about in Australia.
I think so. And it's surprising how many more that we've seen when these people just, there's just something wrong, and they can tell their body's not working properly. And we do a deep dive into their bloods, and then we find that quite often. Mm-hmm. And all of them improve. You know, I mean, it's you know, like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, like and other such autoimmune disorders, they respond extraordinarily well to a keto and especially carnivore diet. I've seen Hashimoto's does as well, but it takes longer to resolve from what I've seen. And so you over a year and a half, people are going, but they're getting better all the time. Just something to be encouraged by.
Yeah. And my wife, Nisha, actually has Hashimoto's. She was diagnosed several years ago. Paleo did not help at all. Keto maybe helped a tiny bit, not much. But when she went ketovore, just almost exclusively meat with an occasional veg, occasional fruit, occasional nuts, she's currently in remission. Her TPO antibody and TG antibodies are both normal. And she's currently taking no thyroid hormone replacement and virtually has no symptoms at all. And so I do think that kind of healing from Hashimoto's is entirely possible, because I've seen it with my own eyes. I think the healing rate's going to be different in different people, depending on your other medical conditions, your age, your overall status, et cetera. I was going to add, I think many people, as they burn, as they metabolize away the excess stored fat, and she'd lost quite a bit of weight, right? I think that it's entirely possible that there is some storage of oxalates and other toxins in fat. I think that's true. And I don't think your body sequesters toxins in your fat so that if you lose weight too fast, you can just poison your own self. I don't believe that. But I do believe that depending on what you were eating when that fat was stored, you probably have some toxic storage in there and some oxalates. And so it wouldn't surprise me, as you go through your layers of fat and metabolize it, that you might have these occasional waves every once a week, once a month of like, ooh, man, and then I feel better again. That wouldn't surprise me at all. Kirst has got an update and a question. Down from 459 pounds down to 421, plus or five, depending on the day, same. Second month carnivore, but I think I've already hit my first plateau or slowed. It's been over a week now, and I haven't dropped below the 420 mark. Any thoughts?
Yeah, well, this is something that we commonly see, and I encourage people to not really necessarily pay attention too much to the scale, but how you feel. I mean, the main thing here is health. I would think that you would agree. That's the main thing. The overarching theme is you're trying to be healthy. You're trying to do what's right for your body. Yep. And what people don't at first maybe see is that it's not just about weight. You know, you don't have just this rock hard body of lean muscle and then just this exterior fat. You know, your body composition is going to be changing dramatically. And while you're losing fat, you'll also be putting on muscle, especially if you're exercising. And so you may not actually lose weight at all. But your clothes might fit differently. They might be more loose on you. Your face might be thinner and you might feel a lot better. I know when I came back to carnivore 5-6 years ago, even just going from just basically keto, like a lot of vegetables, way too many vegetables and not enough meat. And I switched that right around to a ton of meat and no vegetables. I lost a significant amount of weight, probably most of it to do with water weight early on. And then after about 2 weeks, I stayed exactly the same. I stayed the exact same weight for 3 months. But I changed. visibly changing. And I was just replacing my fat with muscle, and my muscle weighs more than fat. So,
and that's very common. I see that all the time in our private group. Two things I would advise anybody in our previous questioner situation: if you're obese or severely obese, get a tailor's tape and take your body measurements. Number one. Number two, be patient and be prepared for stalls like this. This is completely normal, and I'm going to explain to you why this is normal. Only in modern society is it okay and good for a human being to lose weight. Okay, for the entirety of our existence on this planet, 100% of the time, if you were losing weight, that was a disaster. That meant that you were circling the drain. You would soon be dead. Animals in the wild, if they start to lose weight, even sheep in my pasture, if I see a sheep starting to get thin and starting to not eat and getting thinner and thinner, that's terrible. That's a terrible, ominous sign. And so you have to understand your body, even though we live in a modern society with our iPhone 16, we still have an ancient body, ancient DNA, and it does not know that there's a Circle K right down the road and that there's a Kroger's and a Super Walmart. It doesn't know that. It just knows that you're losing weight. And very often the human body will freak out. It'll put on the brakes. And it's like, oh shit, we've lost. Whoa, what's going on here? And then when you assure your body that there's not a famine, you're not in trouble, you haven't fallen in a crevasse and have a broken femur, there's plenty of food. And the way you reassure your metabolism of that is by eating lots of healthy animal fat and protein. Because if there is a famine, or if you did fall down the crevasse, you're not going to be eating any animal fat or protein, right? And so that this is why many people on a predominantly plant-based diet just can't lose weight at all, because their body's freaking out, because it's like, shit, there's no animal fat or animal protein. There's a famine. I'm not losing any fat whatsoever. But when you reassure your body daily with lots of fatty meat, your body is like, okay, I got you. There's not a famine. I can go ahead and burn off some more of this stored fat.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. Absolutely.
All right. Mike says, as CEO of a personal trainer company, low carb meal delivery, and more than 200,000 customers, our number one battle is confusion. The experts push low fat, veg, fruit, etc. Will they ever leave the dark side? How can they ignore the data?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, there's quite a weight of inertia behind all this, you know, and it's just like, I mean, we've all been told this, I mean, literally since I was born, you know, we've just been getting this, just inundated with this. And I think it really took, you know, my professor really just yelling, it's like, plants are trying to kill you, before that actually sunk in my head. I mean, we looked at all the data and all the information about how toxic these things were. And still in my head, I was like, but they're still good for you though, right? It's just, you know, we're just indoctrinated. I mean, I learned in seventh grade that plants and animals are an evolutionary arms race, with plants becoming more and more toxic. So animals can't eat them, and animals becoming more adapted to those poisons. And then we just forget that humans are animals, and and we're involved in this as well. Yep.
That's an excellent point, Doc. I think people I actually have people call me out and say, no, we are not animals. We are not animals. Why would you say that? And I'm like, what the hell do you think you are? And I think people, we've lived in modern society for so many generations, and we've been taught that we're somehow removed and special. And you guys may think, oh, I don't live in the wild. You 100% still live in the wild. Even if you're in a house with all the accoutrement, you're still in the wild. Okay. And if the economy gets a little worse, we'll all remember and realize, oh shit, we are still in the wild. But even though we live in a seemingly artificial surrounding, your body's still listening, and your DNA still is going to do the things it's going to do, and it still matters. And you're an animal. You are Homo sapiens sapien. I'm sorry if that hurts your feelings, but it's true, okay? You would think we wouldn't have to say this. Gwarkin says, it appears some men develop elevated sex hormone binding globulin levels on keto carnivore. Paul Saladino was one such example. I, too, experienced this. Any thoughts? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I think you can see sort of isolated examples of. I certainly haven't seen that in myself, and I haven't seen that in my patients either. So I do wonder if something else is going on, if there's something else adding to this. And, you know, Dr. Saladino, you know, is a very healthy guy, but for some reason, After a year and a half, 2 years, he was having quite significant health issues and ramifications, and he attributed that to lack of carbohydrates. But I've had, you know, less carbohydrates, you know, for longer. I have not run into those problems. And you look at, and you look at, you know, the Inuit and other populations. And like we said earlier, you know, there really is no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. And so if we were going to be getting, you know, damage to our sex hormone binding globulin and our testosterone and our thyroid and our electrolytes, then that would make them essential, right? If we needed them to regulate those systems well, but we don't.
Yeah.
And so
I've actually done hormone optimization in my practice before the clinic burned down, and I've checked thousands of sex hormone binding globulin levels. And what I've seen uniformly is that sex hormone binding globulin levels return to normal as you decrease the carbohydrates and increase the fatty meat. I'm not sure what happened with Dr. Saladino, who Dr. Chafee and I both are friends with him. We like him a lot. We don't necessarily agree with his recommendations, but I find Paul's case to be the exception to the rule, not the rule, because, like I said, in thousands of cases, I've seen the SHBG go down as someone decreases the carbohydrates. You guys are all asking about the canned meat recipe. Nisha Berry says that you can Google that, okay? Kim, I have a friend that had open heart surgery and is very interested in carnivore. What are your thoughts?
I think that they should definitely get on top of that. You know, it's people that are in sort of extremes of health are much more, it's much more important for them to get on top of this. I think this is important for everyone. I think I think I've heard you actually say some of your things that, you know, when people say that, well, what about me in this situation? It's like, yes, the answer is yes to any type of question. This is the right thing to do for every person in every situation in every environment, because that's just our biology. This is our proper human diet. This is our biologically species specific appropriate diet. And
absolutely, that means you're an animal. And if you're an animal, you should eat a species specific diet. And for us, that is at least a fatty red meat heavy, low carb diet. Keto, ketovore, or just go all the way and just eat all the meat and eggs. Dan says, what are your preferred ways to cook your steaks? I personally sous vide, then sear with a torch.
That's a great way of doing it. I prepare them. I have a couple of videos on YouTube showing this, but I get like the big Costco packs of like ribeyes or New Yorks, and I keep them in the cryovac pack and just in the fridge for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks is sort of the longest I've done in 6 weeks. Usually about 4 weeks is where you want to hit it, and that's wet aging. So if you look at, you go to like a nice fancy steakhouse, let's say it's 30 day wet age, 30 day dry age, that's the wet aging part of that, is just leaving it in the cryovac and just forgetting about it. And then I get it out, I cut up into quite thick steaks, usually about 3-inch steaks usually. And I maybe lightly salt them. I'm using less and less salt as I go, but I still do a bit of salt. I put them on drying racks. I let them dry out. Usually about, for the big thick steaks, I find for my preference is 5 to 7 days is sort of a sweet spot of taste and texture. Yep. And then I'll pan fry them or I'll grill them. If I pan fry them, I'll use a thick coating of tallow. And it almost like deep fries, and it crisps up the sides. It's actually amazing. Like it makes
crunchy. I do the same exact thing in a cast iron skillet, and I actually use bacon grease, get it super hot, and then put the steak, and then you get the medium rare interior, and you get that crispy sear on the outside. It's freaking amazing. The only thing I would add, Dan, is if you're sous videing regularly, please sous vide in either glass containers or silicone containers. Please do not sous vide in plastic.
Absolutely.
Decorless Carb says, throwing this one back out, are there any concerns with long-term carnivore and decreased metabolic flexibility?
No, I don't think so. And I think that's actually supported by the data as well. You know, Professor Ben Bickman out of BYU speaks about this. He's been studying insulin metabolism for over 15 years, and he was discussing different research talking about metabolic flexibility in the sense of saying, well, you know, maybe you become insulin insensitive because you haven't been using this. And there are studies that if you've been, you know, keto or carnivore for a number of months, and then you do a glucose tolerance test, that you might have a pretty poor result. However, after a couple of days, it normalizes and you're completely fine. The reason for that, as he explains, is that when you're eating a large burden of exogenous carbohydrates, your body actually preloads your pancreas with insulin. And so you pre-make this insulin anticipating this big yes. rush of carbs. And then when you're not doing that, your body doesn't have to do that, because like we said earlier, your body's efficient. It's not just going to make something for the fun of it, you know? So it's anticipating this big shock of sugar, because, and high blood sugar kills diabetics. It causes direct damage to our body. So it's like, okay, we got to be careful here. And when you're not doing that, you lull your body into a false sense of security, and then you blindside it with some carbs. It's going to take a bit of time to adjust to that, but it will adjust to that.
Yeah.
And so that flexibility.
Totally agree. And the human body is miraculously capable of adapting to different diets. We see this every day in the vegan community when they don't drop dead. It's obvious that the human body can adapt to even maladapted diets. But when you're eating a diet full of protein and fat and very little carbohydrate, your pancreas has no reason to pre-make all this insulin and have it sitting there at the ready. But as soon as you eat that, of course your pancreas is going to ramp back right back up with insulin production. It's not an idiot. Soleimani says, do I need to worry about potassium and magnesium supplementation? When I add up my potassium intake from carnivore, it falls short by 2,000 milligrams, assuming 4,000 milligrams a day is normal.
No, I haven't seen any of that either. And in actual practice, but also again, if we're going back to the fundamental principles that this is our biologically appropriate diet, then you're going to have everything you need in the proportion that you need it. And so your body's going to work differently depending on what you eat. And when you're eating what you're supposed to eat, you will maintain that. I've never had a problem with potassium. I've never had a problem with patients with their potassium or magnesium. In fact, magnesium goes up. There's a shortage of magnesium in Australia for some reason.
Oh, in the US as well. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I find that comes right up.
Only two things I would add to that. There's two ways that the way we eat meat today and the way we drink water today is not ancestrally appropriate. Our ancestors 50,000 years ago, they drank river water, stream water, puddle water. Okay. That's the water they drink. And all that water is rich in electrolytes and minerals, right? And also when our ancestors 50,000 years ago, when they dropped a 2,000 pound elephant or a 1,000 pound bison, they didn't have a block and tackle. They couldn't hang it up and drain it. And so the meat by definition was still bloody. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, when Dr. Chafee or I, when we check someone's electrolyte balances, we check the blood, because the blood is an excellent source of potassium, of magnesium, of sodium, of chloride. And so by eating the bloody meat and by drinking standing water or running water, they were getting excellent sources of electrolytes and minerals. And that's actually one of the reasons I helped Keto Chow develop the daily mineral drops, is for just those two things that, you know, I'm not advocating people go out and drink mud puddle water, because you're going to get the shits if you do that. Please don't do that. Right. And also, most people do not want their meat bloody. They want it to be thoroughly drained, because that's how we grew up eating it. That's what looks normal to us, but that's actually not normal. We've only been doing that for the last few hundred years. It seems to me like some people, because we've got this normal distribution curve, right? The vast majority of people, their magnesium gets better on carnivore, no questions, even keto. Potassium always stays within normal limits in my experience. But there is some people over here on this end of the tail who have to think about supplementing with something like that for whatever reason. I think it's just the normal variability in the genetic differences in people. Although there's not many, there are a few. But you haven't seen much of that in your practice, needing supplementation like that?
No, certainly not. But I definitely agree. You know, when people come to me and say like they have something that's a bit off, like, well, what is this? And like, well, it doesn't really matter what it is. It is low. And so it's okay to actually sort of supplement in those conditions. You know, just taking supplements, just for the sake of it, I don't think is maybe necessary. But if you have a diagnosed deficiency in something, then absolutely, for whatever reason, you know, you have a deficiency in that, and that is a mineral that's useful, and that supplementation would be beneficial in that case.
I totally agree. Warbuck says, both you guys are great. Thank you, Warbuck. You're changing the paradigm. That's the plan. Should I get my type 1 diabetic son on carnivore?
100%. Absolutely. I mean, we've been using a ketogenic diet since I think the 1800s for diabetics to help stabilize their blood sugars.
Yes.
And absolutely. I mean, and again, to your earlier point, is your son human? Then yes, he should definitely 100%. Be on a human diet.
Absolutely. And I would say anybody who's a type 1 diabetic, anybody who has LADA, anybody who has MODY, anybody who's pre-diabetic or type 2 diabetic, you need to start either meat-heavy keto or carnivore tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Literally tomorrow morning you need to stop. Now, if you're currently insulin dependent, you've got to either get a CGM to wear, or you've got to prick your finger 7, 8, 9, 10 times a day, and you also need to touch base with your doctor, because your blood sugar levels are going to start to plummet quickly in a good way, not a bad way. But you've got to be on, you've got to be ready to lower your insulin intake, or you'll wind up with hypo and you might pass out or something, because you're going to be returning to normal and now you're taking too much insulin. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. And most people I see with type one, they end up just getting on a background dose of Lantus, like a minimum dose of Lantus. They just get that. It's in the background, and that covers them through the day. They don't have to take, multiple or any, short acting, insulin, and their body's just regulated. So it's very, very, very easy, especially from, younger people going through teenage years. They really don't like taking their insulin, sort of get rebellious. Right. I shouldn't have to do this. This makes it a lot easier. It's one shot at night. You're done. That's it.
Absolutely. And I actually had two type 1 patients at the clinic before the fire who were type 1. One guy had a C-peptide of 0.1. The other guy had a C-peptide of 0.2. So literally almost no insulin production whatsoever. And they were both carnivore. And one guy injected 10 units of Lantus at bedtime. The other guy used 12 units of Lantus. And both of their A1Cs were 5.4 or 5.5. And so what Dr. Chaffee said is exactly spot on. Hey, KK. Newly diagnosed atherosclerosis of the aorta. I'm 5 years a pescatarian. Would a vegan diet be recommended?
No, I don't think so. But I mean, the thing is that a vegan diet, it doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? Because Oreo cookies and heroin are vegan, right? So that just means without meat. And so there are a lot of ways you can really hurt yourself by going vegan. There's some ways you can benefit. I mean, if you're cutting out a lot of, high octane garbage from processed foods and things like that, and getting to more whole foods, you'll improve short term, but you still do need meat. And there's a lot of things in plants and the sugars and the carbs and the seed oils that really do contribute to that inflammatory process that is atherosclerosis. I saw a vegan gentleman make comments about how cardiovascular disease is the number one killer in the world, really the first world. But that's true. But it doesn't mean that meat and saturated fat is the cause of that. As we've reduced our animal fat intake, saturated fat intake, heart disease rates have tripled. So like, where's the connection there? And in fact, the journal, all the major journals now are actually publishing just the opposite. Even the Journal of the American College of Cardiology published, I think in 2020, a large study showing a meta-analysis showing that like all the available data showed that saturated fat was not connected with atherosclerosis.
Absolutely. And KK and everybody out there, first of all, what Dr. Chaffee said is exactly right. But here's the thing you got to think about. Just think of the average American, what they eat on a daily basis. They're already eating a plant-based diet. True. 80% of their food energy is coming from plants already. So the plant-based people are wanting you to eat even less meat. And now a specific question for KK. Thank you for the super chat, KK. Do you really believe it was the fish that caused you to have atherosclerosis? Because I don't. I think it was the carbohydrates and the sugar and even if you were avoiding added sugar, KK, there's still copious amounts of sugar in fruit and in honey and in other things. And people think, and this is just drives me nuts, Doc, they think that there's only fructose in fruit. And I did a video a few weeks back about the secret sugar in fruits. All fruits, they have fructose, yes, but they also have glucose and they also have sucrose. Table sugar. They literally have sucrose and glucose in them in addition to fructose, both of which are going to spike your blood sugar, KK, and cause inflammation all over your body, including inside your aorta on the intima. And that's what caused your atherosclerosis. It wasn't the little bit of fish you're eating every day. My recommendation would be to eat lots more fish and add back fatty red meat to your diet and eggs with the yolk and get rid of all the sugar, whether added or natural, get rid of all the grains and get rid of all of the vegetable seed oils, KK. And I've got videos on this channel, and Dr. Chafee's got videos on his channel that will walk you through the simple beginning steps to do that. It wasn't the fish, KK. Come on. Come on. Yeah. Lynn, sphincter of OD dysfunction. It flared up after 30 days on carnivore. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. I don't think it's from the meat anyway.
And also sphincter of ODI dysfunction is the only way you can diagnose it is with an EGD with a ERCP. That's the only way you got to get in there and actually see the sphincter in the duodenal wall. And so the symptoms of sphincter of ODI dysfunction are also it can be the symptoms of many other right upper quadrant problems. So instead of just thinking that's what it is again, I'd probably go see my doctor, Lynn, and say, hey, I need you to check this out because I'm eating a much healthier diet now and I'm having these new symptoms. And don't go in and say, I've got sphincter of ODI dysfunction. So go in and tell the doctor your symptoms and then hush and let your doctor go from there. Okay, that's how you do that for all you guys. Don't go in with a diagnosis. Go in with the symptoms. That's what your doctor needs from you. Melanie says, I'm 50 with Hashimoto's. I stopped my period a year ago while on carnivore. I'm trying to up fat to 80-20. What are your thoughts on a fat fast? Is it necessary for ketones?
Well, I mean, look, if you're trying to really ramp up your ketones, that can help. You know, you're just eating tons and tons of fat and you're going to produce, you know, a lot of ketones that can be beneficial. I mean, there are certain situations like in epilepsy or cancer where you've seen like a higher, proportion of ketones is beneficial and neuroprotective, especially in the cases of epilepsy. I think you're doing everything right though. I think that's perfect. You're eating a high fat meat based diet. And, you know, if you want to fast, I guess you can. I'm not, I don't generally fast myself. I generally eat about once a day. That sort of, I guess, is a fast, but I'm not restricting my body from nutrients when it wants it. I'm just eating when I'm hungry. And if you're eating, you know, high density nutrition, you tend to not be hungry as often. So I think you're doing very, very well. And I don't think that there's anything to really change there.
Yeah, I agree. The only thing I would add to that, Melanie, is that it's very, very common for some people, usually women, not always women, to still be doing some degree of portion control or calorie restriction. And I would, the fact that your period stopped, you said you're 50, so you may just be going through menopause, but the fact that you lost your period makes me think that you're probably trying to eat a palm sized portion of steak, maybe lean steak. You need to stop that. You are an animal, Melanie. You need to eat just like every other animal on the planet. When they see species appropriate food in front of their face, they smash it. They wolf it down. They don't hesitate. They don't stop until they literally are so stuffed they cannot eat another bite or they will vomit. That's how an animal should eat. And Melanie, that's how you should eat.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like lionesses and things like that, they're not worried about their hips. You know, they're just eating a ton of meat.
Eat till you're full. And if you're eating the wrong shit, you need to worry about your hips. But if you're eating the right stuff, your hips are going to be just right. Marty Mack says 1,278 days of not eating fiber. Also, no more IBS. Meat here.
Very good.
This is what we're talking about, guys. Anybody else have essentially put your ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, or IBS in remission with eating a carnivore diet? Put your story in the comments. Or any chronic medical condition that you and your doctor thought was permanent, that you've essentially put it in remission by eating a carnivore diet, please put it in the comments, because I promise you, there are vegans like vegans live longer in the comments. They're going to read your comments. So vegans live longer is said about 100 times in this chat. Cardiovascular disease is the top cause of death globally. Yes, vegans live longer. We know that.
Yeah.
But what you're intimating is that it's the meat that's causing that, or the saturated fat, or the cholesterol in our diet that's causing that. And all of those things have been disproven. As Dr. Chafee said, even the American Heart Association published an article that says saturated fat has nothing to do with heart disease. And even years before that, they came out and said that eating cholesterol has nothing to do with heart disease whatsoever. So vegans live longer. If you've got a question, I'm eager to answer your questions, but just spamming that same comment over and over and over, it kind of makes you look dumb. It doesn't really affect us in any negative way. Thanks for the super chat. One thing says, is there a difference between potassium citrate and bicarbonate in terms of supplementation? Is it okay to mix and match?
I wouldn't have too much experience with either of those. I tend to just eat meat and drink water.
Yeah, I wouldn't supplement with bicarb, Soleimani. Your stomach acid is going to basically cancel the basic nature of that in 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. So you're wasting your money. If you want to get extra potassium, you can use potassium citrate. There's 20 different kinds of potassium on Amazon. I tend to like something that's got lots of stuff, like the Keto Chow Daily Mineral Drops. It's got potassium, magnesium, and then it also has iodine and selenium and molybdenum and all kinds of other little minerals. And even electrolytes are minerals too, right? Don't discriminate against the electrolytes. They are also minerals. But by doing that, if you get enough potassium and you take a little too much, if you have normal kidney function, you're just going to urinate it out just with any of the other minerals. And so I would do something like that so that you're getting kind of a multi-mineral supplement rather than just trying to focus on one particular electrolyte.
Yeah.
All right, Doc, can you stay for a few more questions? Are you good?
No, yeah. No, I'm fine. Yeah.
Okay. All right. The people are loving this. We got 2,500 folks watching this, Doc. Mindy. Lovely. Thanks, doctors, for inspiring me in my life change. 10 months, beef, butter, bacon, and eggs, 150 kilograms lost.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's 320-something pounds. That's a lot of weight. Reverse prediabetes. Feeling amazing. I have lymphedema, which causes discomfort. Should I limit fat and salt intake? Absolutely not. I just spoke at a lipedema conference, and this is a common myth that doctors will tell you with lipedema and lymphedema, which are two separate things. You do not need to limit animal fat or salt. You need to salt your food to taste, and you need to eat plenty of healthy animal fat. Neither one of them affect lipedema or lymphedema in a negative fashion. What say you, Doc?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And also, you think about how much you've benefited off of doing exactly what you're doing now. And, you know, why are you changing your game plan? You know,
her doctor told her to stop that stuff. I guarantee you, 100%. She went to a new doctor, and he's like, "Oh shit, stop eating all this fat and salt."
And my now God, he's you're spooked her. Healthy. I'm going to be out of a job.
Yeah, but he ignored the 150 kg loss, man. He's like, "Oh, that's too much fat." Guarantee.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing is like, you don't switch horses in the middle of the race, you know? And I always love it. My father would get so upset. Whenever we'd watch, you know, like football on a Sunday or something like that, because like, or if we were supporting a team, you know, we'd be watching, we'd be doing really well. And then at the end, we just change all the game plan, change our entire defense and go to like a prevent defense.
Yeah.
And we just start losing yards. And we ended up losing the game, and it would drive him crazy. It's like, why are you changing the thing that got you in the position that you're in?
Yeah,
like,
if you're winning, don't change what you're doing. And honey, you're winning, okay?
Yeah, you're winning. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
100%. Brain Game says, will carnivore help with neuropathy in the legs, bowels, intestines due to Cauda Equina syndrome? Will it help repair nerves?
Well, it can help your body heal from damage. There is such a thing as damage done, but I have seen people improve significantly. Sometimes when we do surgery for a cauda equina or for, you know, a peripheral, or for, you know, radiculopathy, we remove the compression. And a lot of times we have to say like, well, this may not get it better, but it'll stop it from getting worse because we can't guarantee one way or the other. We hope that it gets better, but it doesn't always. And so, you know, it sounds like you're in that category. And so a lot of people, even when they have their nerves decompressed, they will continue to have quite bad pain, quite debilitating pain. And I have definitely seen that improve significantly. I think just your interpretation of the pain, the inflammation is going to be reduced, and your experience of that pain is certainly going to be reduced. And it could, well, it's just going to make your body healthy in general. And so nerves take a long time to heal, but it's going to put you into a better position to heal from it. Can it heal it all the way? I can't tell you that.
Right.
We'll just have to see, but I have seen it help.
Peripheral neuropathy was one of the first things that made me think that keto carnivore was more than a weight loss hack. I'm talking about 7, 8, 9 years ago when I first started recommending this to my most morbidly obese patients. you never see neuropathy get better. I had so many patients on gabapentin and pregabalin, just hundreds and hundreds of them for neuropathy from the lumbar spine, from a previous injury, from the cervical spine. And these people would come in and be like, "Doc, I ran out of my Neurontin prescription and I didn't refill it. And my neuropathy is so much better. Can keto do that?" And if, initially I was like, "Well, hell no, keto can't. That's just a weight loss diet, right?" But then the more I started really hearing this hundreds of times, especially with carnivore, especially, good God, how many thousands of stories have I heard? I'm like, "Well, shit, maybe it does." And so when you start to think about it, yeah, axons can regrow. Myelin sheaths can rejuvenate. It's a very slow process, but it can happen. And then also, I think a lot of the nerve pain, the small fiber pain and stuff, is just chronic, inappropriate daily inflammation caused by the diet from that day. And when you stop eating the shit, I think immediately those nerve fibers just start to lighten up and be like, "Oh yeah, that's better. I feel better now. I'm going to stop sending pain signals to the brain." Do you think that, Doc?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly what's going on. Is I think that I've seen it on myself, and I've seen it with people. You know, if something would slip into my food, if I was at a restaurant and they, you know, had a bit of rice or beans or something like that. I remember going to a restaurant previously and I was trying to sort of scrape the rice and beans off, but I didn't get all of it off. And I remember eating it and I was like, "Well, what's this going to do to me?" And I had like stabbing back pain for 4 full days, to the point that it was very difficult for me to get out of bed. And I talk to people when they're going carnivore and they sort of slip up or like, "Oh, is it that big a deal?" I had a guy I was talking to, and he went to New York. His family's from New York, and it's like, "Oh, but what if it's like the best pizza in New York? Is that okay?" I'm like, "Come on, you know the answer to that." But he was just like, "Well, I'm gonna try it." And so he had pizza, and he just said he felt miserable for the next few days. He was like, his joint pain was up, his back pain was up, and this is something that he hadn't experienced in months and months and months of being carnivore. All of a sudden, bang, back. Yep. Like that. So that's an acute inflammatory response, and yep, you're going to be experiencing that right there. So I think that's a major, major part of this.
Absolutely. And I've got a big toe that's kind of my red flag. I never have lumbar pain. I've never had an injury. I don't have any reason to have neuropathy. But if I stray too far off the straight and narrow, Dr. Chafee, I have a little bit too much alcohol. I have a little bit too many carbs, maybe my anniversary, maybe my birthday. And Nisha's like, "Oh, come on." And I'm like, I give in to the temptress, right? That night, my left big toe, I'll just have this weird tingling, itchy neuropathy that is bad enough that it keeps me awake. But that never happens unless I go off the reservation. It's so funny. Darby, I've read your question a couple of times, and I can't really figure out what you're asking or how I would answer your question. Thanks for the super chat, though. I appreciate it very much, but I don't really understand what you're asking. Can you get anything out of that, Doc?
I'll try this. I'm going to actually get type 1 diabetes antibody test instead of saying... I would just be guessing, unfortunately.
Yeah. Sorry, Darby. We'd love to answer your question, but we don't understand it. Weekster, severe psoriasis from strep throat. 3 months in, I'm now stuck. Do you think autoimmunity caused by molecular mimicry is able to heal with a carnivore?
Absolutely. Yeah.
100%.
Well, yeah. You're getting rid of the thing that your body's going to attack, and then you're not going to have the antibodies that will then spill over and attack the rest of your body. Yeah. Absolutely.
I've got a video on this channel about psoriasis. Got some research down in the show notes. Psoriasis is very intimately linked to inflammation and hyperinsulinemia, and a fatty meat heavy keto, ketovore, or a full carnivore diet is going to lower your insulin back to low normal very quickly, and it's going to decrease the chronic inappropriate inflammation in your body, Wickster. 100% I agree with Dr. Chafee. All right, Doc, let's get a couple of more here. Albets GI said to go low fat with pancreatitis. Do I have to?
No, you don't.
No. eating fatty meat did not cause your pancreatitis. No. Albets. I 100% guarantee you that it was either too much alcohol, too much fructose, too much highly processed carbohydrates, maybe too much medications, either legal or illegal. I don't know you that well, so I'm not going to judge. But it was not the fatty meat and eggs with the yolk that caused your pancreatitis, Abetz. And so I would encourage you to eat more fatty red meat and eggs with the yolk.
Or possibly a scorpion. You never know.
It could have been a scorpion. That's exactly right. Very rare, but possible. All right, we'll get one more, Doc. Karen says, carnivore for 7 months. T-score -3 for both femoral necks on her DEXA scan. Use leg machines at Planet Fitness enough that muscles shake afterwards 3 times a week. Is that enough weight-bearing exercise? She's 77. Okay, first of all, let me just say I'm in love with Karen Mora. The 76-year-old woman is at Planet Fitness hitting the leg press 3 times a week to the point where she's got jello legs when she's done.
Yeah.
Boo, huzzah, Karen Mora. Honey, absolutely. Rock that shit. Do you think that's enough weight bearing?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it's a lot more than anyone else is doing your age. 100%. And so, you know, and so you just feel your body, you know, and if that's what your body can do, then do it. But you know, you can keep challenging yourself and you're going to be able to build up. But I mean, leg days, 3 days a week, I think that's probably very good. You know, you want to have you go into growth cycles, sort of like, you know, 36-hour growth cycles. You know, if you're doing sort of more than that, if you're doing sort of like daily heavy legs, you're probably not going to get as much bang for your buck on that. Exactly. So I think that's a very good one.
Yeah, that's awesome. Karen, my only worry with your T-score, I just don't want you to overdo it too quickly, too much too quickly. So I'm 100% in love with you for what you're doing, but also listen to your body. It sounds like you've got this figured out. I've got a couple of YouTube videos on this channel about osteoporosis, osteopenia, and bone strength, because there's other things you can do to help those bones get stronger as well. But this right here, this is a grand slam. You win today's chat 100%.
Yeah.
All right, Doc, last question. Oh, Ron Melrose, thank you very much for the super chat. Evelyn says, some plant-based doctors say animal protein worsens immune conditions, increasing antibodies in the body. What are your thoughts on this? I have hyperthyroidism.
Well, I wonder what their evidence is. I don't think there is any. And
I would say your doctor's full of shit. But Dr. Chafee would say, I really don't know what the evidence is. You see the difference? That's the difference.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's the thing. You know, I mean, you just don't see autoimmune issues in the carnivore community. Right. You know, there was, you know, I've seen it directly. You know, I'm sure you've seen it. You know, Dr. Berry, like people are just completely reversing their autoimmune issues. Autoimmune issues respond extraordinarily well to a carnivore diet and even a keto diet. And there's tons of studies with like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, looking at you just putting people on an elemental diet, just giving them just the macros and micros that they need, and that this actually is better to get them out of Crohn's flare up than steroids, and that, you know, putting someone on a they call it a fasting mimicking diet, but you know what is that? That's a keto diet, you know,
100%.
You know, yep. And so and that kept people in remission for Crohn's on average 51 weeks versus, it was a control trial versus the control group that were eating carbs and fiber, kept people in remission on average 0 weeks, which is not a lot of weeks. And so, you know, it's the evidence shows exactly the opposite of that. I think there are a lot of doctors that are just really just clinging as tightly to this as they possibly can.
Yeah, and it's getting kind of pathetic at this point, isn't it, Doc? It's getting it's kind of getting embarrassing at this point. It's like, really, you really want to stick with that?
Yeah. Well, it's yeah, it is. And it is really just going against the evidence. And, you know, I talk to people and they say, well, you know, my doctor said that, you know, I have to stop eating fat. I have to stop eating meat because of my cholesterol and because of my heart disease. And they're even their cardiologist saying that. And I just tell them, it's just like, well, then you need to probably, you know, get, you know, either, you know, introduce these studies to your doctor or get a new one, because that doctor has not been looking at the literature in the last several years. Exactly. And I mean, that is what the literature is showing. And, yeah, I mean, there's been books written about this. You know, there's a cardiologist, Asim Malhotra, who's written a number of these systematic reviews and meta-analyses, and wrote a book called A Statin-Free Life. And he just paints this out. This is just not what we were told it was. But for some reason, there's just people just have this death grip on this idea that
it's I call it the echo of the lie. Even when the lie's been proven false, your mama and your hairdresser and your mechanic might still be repeating that lie out in the community because they don't know better. But if your damn doctor's repeating this lie, even though it's been shown to be just a bullshit lie, that's very worrisome. And that is perhaps a red flag that you might need to do as Dr. Chafee suggested and find a new doctor. Dr. Chafee, thank you. Thank you so much for doing this with me. I appreciate it so much. Tell people where they can find you if they were especially enamored with your intellect or your blue eyes or that sexy beard.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure. It's great to talk to you again. And it's great to do this. I have a YouTube channel. It's just my name, Anthony Chafee, MD. That's also my YouTube or my YouTube channel, as well as my Instagram, as well as like a Patreon. And then I have, what else I have? Those are the main ones. And then I have a podcast just called The Plant Free MD. It's just sort of going on that theme of.
You also have a Twitter account, which you need to become more active on post haste.
Yeah. I do. That's probably one of the ones that I haven't been as active on. So I need to, I have to sort of jump. You
step more it up, on. Doc. Come on. I need some help over there. The vegans are trying to cut my throat.
Okay. I will definitely do that. So that's Anthony_Chafee. And I'll get more active on that as well.
I love it. I love it. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you for the super chats. Thanks for sharing this video on your favorite social media. And also if you'd like to be able to ask questions like this on several additional live Q&As with me and Nisha, we do that inside our private community. There's a link down in the show notes below. Thanks, Dr. Chafee. Get back to that presentation. You got work to do, my friend.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.